So Mr. Graham's going to help me out here, and he's calling the meeting to order of the Economic Development Commission at January 11th at 7:30. Roll call, Mr. O'Connell, Mr. Brown, Ms. Slapika, Mr. Graham.
Present.
Ms. Moss.
Here.
Mr. Newbecker.
Present.
And Mr. Brangle.
Here.
We do have a quorum. There is no public comment. Hey, good morning. And so, well, we just skipped over a public comment.
No comments.
All right. All right, no problem. Here you go. All right, so there are minutes in front of you. I'll need a motion to approve the regular and executive session meeting minutes from December 14th, 2018.
So moved.
Need a second?
Second.
I think I have two sets of the same minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. No, they are different. My coffee hasn't kicked in yet.
No worries. There's no questions or changes. I'll need all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Passes. All right, today's meeting focus, like I said, we have a hard stop at 8:30. Mr. Housiel's here from Housiel Ravine to review any comments you have on the draft comprehensive plan. We're running this through all the boards and commissions first just to get their feedback. Ultimately, then this will go to the plan commission. We'll take public comment from the community on the plan before ultimately it gets approved by the village board. So with that, I'll turn it over to John.
All right, thanks, Eric. Again, so I'm here just to see if there's any comments you have or suggestions to make to this working draft. We met with the plan commission and the EDC jointly before the holidays. So everything that was discussed in the direction given at that meeting is in this draft already. So it should reflect what the plan commission and the EDC said. That was a discussion primarily about the different corridors. So Lake Street, the Village Center area by Lathrop Park, Harlem, Madison, and North Avenue. So we had a detailed discussion about those corridors block by block with you and the Plan Commission. So that's all in here already. But this is a working draft of the entire document. The only thing not in the draft that you've reviewed is the bicycle plan component, which is being finalized now by KLOA, a resident task force. So that will be folded in probably in the next couple of weeks. But everything else is in this working draft. It's been in front of now the Historic Preservation Committee, Commission, Sustainability Commission, a Resident Bicycle Task Force. Then I'll get comments from the EDC. We will then put all those comments back into a revised draft, and then we will review that with the Plan Commission prior to it going to public hearing for the community to look at. So before residents and the public at large looks at it, we want to make sure it's in as good a shape as possible before it goes out for public review. So it's going, it's sort of making its way around all the different committees right now. So one of the last commissions to take a look at it is, or hear comments from, is the EDC. So that's why I'm here this morning to do this. Hear any comments you've got about this working draft. But hopefully if you looked at it, maybe you haven't looked at it in detail yet, I don't know. But if you have looked at it, you'll see that you'll recognize a lot of what's in here because we discussed it before the holidays. So it should reflect what we've already heard. So.
You're not going to present 109 pages?
I'm not going to present 190 pages. So, yeah. So the draft has been available. I think that this committee was sent it, a month ago? All the committees got something like that?
Right before I left for my vacation, I forwarded it out.
Okay. All right. So. Again, it covers residential, commercial, open space, transportation, community facilities, all the different sub-area plans. The corridors are in here in detail, block by block. Again, the only thing not in here is the bicycle recommendations, because those are just not being finalized. So, and most of the boards and commissions that we've met with so far, like Historic Preservation tore through the whole thing. They had a couple of, like literally, I think two or three minor wordsmithing things, one paragraph and a couple words. That's been done. Sustainability Commission went through them and has sort of a punch list of recommended changes that they want to see made to certain pages. Again, mostly it's minor wordsmithing in a couple of paragraphs, only one or two things of substance. So far it's been pretty straightforward. So no surprises. But I wanted to make sure to get your comments before we send it to the Plan Commission. And, this could be a real quick meeting. If you need more time to review it,
what's your timing?
Because of the holidays and everything else.
Well, do we as the EDC want to submit a...
a memo or something?
Yeah, something, or do we want to have a forum here? I've got comments, but
okay.
Some of them are nitpicky, but...
Yeah, no, but a lot of them
I mean, wordsmithing.
Yeah, and a lot of them are. So we did, like, the EDC gave us, like, a memo highlighting maybe 20 different things, and most of them were, like, change this word to that word, change this word to this word. I said there were maybe two suggestions that were sort of wordsmithing that I said, we can do 95% of everything you've asked easily. Mm-hmm. These two will have to think about how we want to reword those. That's sort of how we approach that.
I wouldn't mind us putting a memo together. I mean, I just got back in the country a few hours
right,
ago, so
right.
I'm not...
Oh, come on.
How long is it you could have read it on Friday. Yeah.
You shouldn't have watched that movie, you know?
Tough crowd. For the record, I'm not going to go say anything.
I'm kidding. No.
I am not fully prepared, so I'm continuing that right now.
Okay. And that's fine. So again, we wanted to give ourselves sort of an internal deadline of getting all comments, at least from this working draft, by the end of next week. So
okay.
That's like our last meeting, as we're meeting a second time or third time now with the Bicycle Task Force next Tuesday. And then we'll get their comments. They've already reviewed it once.
But. We could send our comments to Eric if he can
compile them.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, if you got, you know, the wordsmithing, you know, language error, typos, things, that's stuff you can forward to me. If there's any more big picture conceptual things you want to talk about here, we can talk about that as well, and then we can always bring that back to your next meeting, too.
Yeah. And again, the good thing is we met with you and the Planning Commission prior to developing this. We didn't meet with Historic Preservation and say, what do you think we're developing this now? We met with them and people from their commission earlier on in the process, when we met with a lot of different people. We prepared all those exhibits for this group, if you remember, and we went through what should this block be, what should that block be, what should this land use be, should we develop this, should we not? So everything we talked about before as a group is already in here with regard to that for you guys. So, and some of the other boards and commissions didn't have the ability to do that with us prior to this draft. So.
This is replacing one that's more than 10 years old.
Yes, they're written for a 10 to 20 year horizon. Most communities say they're written for about a 20 year frame, but most are redone within 10 to 15 years. This one I think is about 13 years old.
Yeah, 2003.
Yeah, so
15.
15, 16 years old, the one right now, so it's being redone. And every, you know, with every, and I helped work on the last one. And there are some changes from this one to that one, based on sort of where people are. So. But compared to a lot of communities, we're 100% built out, relatively small. Not a lot is going to change in terms of land use, I think, so it's a bit more nuanced. Some comprehensive plans are, they're really severely guiding documents because things are expected to change severely over a decade or two of time, and it's not the case here, so it's a different sort of flavor.
But this also serves as a benchmark for future development, right? I mean, when projects come, they're weighed against the compliance to the comprehensive plan.
Correct.
Right,
so the DRB, the Development Review Board, there are a lot of uses here. Anything over 20,000 square foot in lot area, anything over 20,000 square feet in building area, has to be approved as a planned development in River Forest. Any multifamily has to be approved as a planned development. Any mixed use has to be approved as a planned development. That's according to our zoning ordinance. One of the first standards of review in a planned development is, because there's several, does it put in an overdue burden on infrastructure? Is it damaging to the value of surrounding properties? There's a whole bunch of things that have to be tested or measured against. And one of them is it, supported by and consistent with the recommendations of the comprehensive plan. That's one of the standards mm-hmm.
right.
in a development review. Now, if something is not, That doesn't mean it automatically is not going to get approved. It just means that the applicant says, comprehensive plan calls this out for residential. Our development proposal is to recommend commercial. Here's why. But it's something they then have to make the case for if it's different from the comprehensive plan. But they do have to measure it against the comprehensive plan's recommendations. Yes, it's one of the first things they have to do. So it's a best way to look at it is it's a guide for decision making. It helps inform the plan commission, you, when you meet to discuss development, the DRB, they should all be looking at this saying, is it doing what we say we're trying to accomplish over the next day?
Isn't every plan development always deviated from the comprehensive plan? I'm not saying that sarcastically, it's just...
No, they've always deviated from the zoning. They have not always deviated from the comprehensive plan. A lot of times the comprehensive plan says, this should be mixed use, like town center, or this should be multifamily. But when they come in, the deviations they get are not from the comprehensive plan. There have been some that have deviated from the comp plan, but most don't. What they do deviate from is the zoning ordinance. The zoning ordinance is what regulates what they can and cannot do. And if they don't comply with zoning, they need a thing called an SDA, a site development allowance. And the height thing that they can raise up is the most recent one. So they said the height in that district is 50 feet. Well, I've been doing this for 20 years as a resident and as a planning consultant for the village. There isn't one plan development in the village center area or up and down Harlem that hasn't needed some kind of relief, whether it's 3 feet, 7 feet, 20 feet. Everything has needed relief, but that's relief from zoning, not planning. A lot of those have met the comprehensive plan intent. Multi-story, multifamily, mixed-use development with retail on the ground floor, residential above, perfectly consistent with the plan, but a little bit taller than zoning allows, so they need relief. So. But you're right, every DRB, including that has included residential, has needed, has deviated from allowed height in the village, except for maybe Park and Madison condos or townhomes. Those two were probably complied with the height, but I don't know, we're real close.
Park and Madison.
The park townhomes on Madison.
Yeah.
Those I think maybe did not need a height variation. They needed some other ones like setbacks and stuff. But that's zoning.
Wanna make some comments?
Sure.
Yeah, please.
Actually specific to that, and this is why the comprehensive plan should set forth, I think, a vision. It's a 10-20 year plan, although it's gonna be updated. Yeah. The one area that I still have some question about is the west end of North Avenue. And efforts were made by this committee and others to push the TIF and include all that for the potential redevelopment. Not to say that we displace the housing, and that is a significant portion of economical housing in the River Forest. But it sort of suggests that that's just to stay that way. And I think the whole notion of the TIF was to promote economic development in the entire corridor. And again, it may be fine staying like that. I think there's traffic issues and parking that we don't necessarily like. And I know this was a hot button in the last go-around. But I do think if there's an opportunity for redevelopment, that ought to be allowed. And my question is, does the comprehensive plan preclude that because we only stick to, let's keep it as residential or multifamily residential?
No, and that's a good question because that is one of the changes. Before, from Harlem all the way down to Thatcher, there were different levels of this ought to be commercial or mixed mm-hmm. use. It could have residential back into it if it's mixed use. But keeping in mind sort of the need to have a certain amount of affordable housing, keeping in mind the fact that we have viable, pretty attractive, well-maintained, more modest housing in that location, given the retail and commercial environment has wholesale shifted from where it was 17 or years ago when the last one was done. The viability of commercial from sort of St. Luke over to Harlem being better than it is mm-hmm. at the other end of the corridor, with the exception of CVS, because it's all residential except for a couple of things in CVS. One of the departures from here is there is sort of a split. So from roughly St. Luke over to Harlem, it is commercial mixed use, could have some residential above. But when you get to the areas that are firmly well-established multifamily going the other direction, without, you know, commercial mixed in the hallway, we just said this could see redevelopment, but this should not be a commercial focus on this end of the corridor. So that is a shift from the last one. So we could certainly discuss that.
Well, my only concern, again, I would go back to, and I think one of the objectives, one of the core objectives ought to, it sort of says this, but not really, is to maximize the use and effectiveness of the existing corridors. We have very limited opportunity
right.
for commercial development.
Right.
So we're maximizing. You said we're built out.
Right.
But as we look and you know, we start giving up some of these sites, it's already residential, but if there's an opportunity to redevelop it as mixed use,
right.
we have TIF that might allow subsidy for housing. You know, there's different ways,
right.
different tools that we put in place to hopefully facilitate that kind of redevelopment if and when 10 years from now, again,
right.
economics may change, there's an opportunity. So that's where I think we have, one of the core objectives is to maximize the use and effectiveness of the commercial corridor.
Sure.
We have to preserve those. And I think always when development comes up on any of those corridors, we look at it from a, I think, a mixed-use perspective.
Right.
Always. Because otherwise, again, we're going to give up if
right.
The Montessori, Keystone, goes to, you know, residential. I think that's a negative, right? And I think you say that, obviously.
Yeah, we literally flag that out as an opportunity site for redevelopment as commercial.
And I think, again, these are sacred, if you will, these corridors. And our we should be adamant about preserving, I think, that hopefully a commercial character first
right.
and mixed use obviously as well. So that's one of the things that I think, particularly given the limitations we have on commercial.
No, that's a real good, this is the sort of thing I think it's a good idea to talk about. That's a real simple fix to change in the plan because that's what it was before. This time if you look and it's on, again, you don't have it in front of you, but it's on page 50 and 51 is North Avenue. And let me just read what it says for that. So we talk about that block being Ashland all the way over to Thatcher, so that western half. And so I'll read what it says here. And right now there is commercial denoted at Park and North Avenue on the corner. There's commercial denoted at CVS. And then there's some commercial in between Lathrop and Ashland. So we're talking about 3.5 blocks. Ashland over to not quite Thatcher. So it says, these blocks are primarily developed with multifamily residential uses. Residential uses vary in size and type of dwelling and include both rental and owner-occupied. This four-block area significantly contributes to the diversity of housing availability in the village, including some of the village's more affordable units. This area should remain predominantly residential and continue to provide a range of housing options. If redevelopment occurs, the area should be reinforced as a mixed residential area. So it's not mixed use, it's, you know, condo, apartment, owner, rental, right? So the existing townhome buildings on the east half of the block between Forest and Thatcher are inconsistent with the character of the village, largely due to the design of the buildings as well as the congestion of the parking along North Avenue. An improved parking configuration should be explored to improve the safety and appearance of this area. We had that in the last comprehensive plan as well as some redevelopment scenarios on Harlem, and the board took both of those out
right.
Upon adoption. Commercial uses exist on the southeast corner of Park and North, and on the southeast corner of Thatcher and North. CVS development on the corner of Thatcher Avenue and North there should serve as an example for use of quality building materials, commercial area expansion, and use of landscaping the buffer screening commercial activity from residential. So it'd be an easy fix to say that this area ought to be considered for future redevelopment, including but not limited to both residential and commercial mix of uses.
Right.
It'd be a very simple thing to change that would leave it open to that. The likelihood of that is less than on the east half just because of the configuration of the existing uses. But we might not want to close the door.
I don't want to close the door. That's all.
That's
this
fair.
Is a 10-year, 15-year, you know,
totally
as a benchmark.
Yeah.
Somebody comes back to the commission and says, does it match the comprehensive
right.
plan? I think we ought to be open to that.
Totally
I agree with the viability. Is it ever going to happen? Probably
right.
not.
Right.
We have other objectives because we want to keep the diversity of housing type. But who knows? With TIF and all that, maybe there is a project that could go that's a mixed use.
Right.
Affordable mix, you know, and you talk about gateways in some areas, but not there. That's a key gateway, actually, into River Fork.
That's a huge gateway.
And it's a dog. You come in. Actually,
really
CVS is okay, except CVS is set back. It's got parking in front. It's not urban as you and I like urban, but
right. And the other thing was a couple of things with CVS. If we could redo that monument that's there, it's sort of pushed back behind the landscaping court, sort of pulled off, so it looks like it's more of a CVS thing than a corridor gateway. So
right.
the placement
yeah.
of that to me, and again, that was done a long, long time ago. But the townhouse development just immediately east, you know, you've got a 300-foot run of just So this, the village's biggest curb cut on North Avenue. It's just, it's just a series of parking lots pulled right in off of North Avenue. That's not safe, nor is it attractive. And we've got some ideas on how to maybe fix that, but it would require tying in over to Keystone.
You know, and that's the kind of thing, the other thing, just reinforcing those kind of visual gateways. Right. You talk about them, but I think that's a key one, that whether it's streetscape or something, at least that you know, I'm in River Fork, you know, I've come somewhere. It, you have no idea. You're just rolling through. It's like all North Avenue, this homogenous kind of.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah. And that's where, again, if there's an opportunity future for redevelopment, right, I'd be open to it. So
that's a good suggestion.
Those key gateways, I think, are very important identifiers as River Fork. I think the other piece, Jen, and I've talked about this before, with the relationship to the other side is critical, and I don't think there's not much in here about that. And on any of the corridors. So all the edges are, you know, we sort of take a myopic, insular view that this is just River Forest, but it has everything to do with Galewood, Elmwood, Oak Park, Forest Park, and we don't really address that. Because I think context across the street should inform what's happening on our side. That synergy between all, in all the corridors, I think there should be a statement that says we should be looking to collaborate with the adjacent. And you, again, it's in there.
It's
in there.
It's not as succinct as that.
But it's to me, to talk about the corridor without some understanding of what's happening across the street and some outreach, at least some kind of collaboration with the adjacent.
Yeah, this
township. Again, as an objective of a comprehensive plan, to me, context is so important to that.
And I think of the corridors where that is most relevant and reflective in the recommendations is Madison Street. Mm-hmm. It's not IDOT control, it's between us and Forest Park. We've got the joint streetscaping that has recently taken place. Well, even over the holidays, the holiday lighting and decorations were the same on both sides of the street, which I didn't know. Has that always been the case?
On Madison?
Yeah.
Yeah, we coordinated that with Forest Park.
Okay, so that looks real nice.
Yeah.
But there's even a point in here where we say, from sort of like where Bright and Clean is going east, buildings should be at the property line. They shouldn't be further back. It should be parking in front. Then when you get from sort of like Heinz Lumber going that way, it's okay if parking is a little bit more in front. It doesn't have to maintain that because across the street's a cemetery. You don't have that pedestrian flare. But when you get east of that, where Dunkin' Donuts kind of is, then you've got buildings right up on the south side of Forest Park as well. So you want to sort of maintain that downtown-y little charm. So we don't want to lose that on our side. Bit different on Harlem because it's such a hodgepodge up and down. And North Avenue is even more difficult. And I know everybody goes, boy, they have Johnny's and Pizza Co. and all these other things, Spizzico, and we don't. I think one of the things that drives that the most is they allow parking configurations that we don't. Every street is one way the other direction with lined up parking on both sides. And we have limited opportunity to do that on our side, so parking becomes a much bigger deal. Most of those uses that are successful, those types of uses on Elmwood Park, don't provide a ton of, they rely on that parking for businesses, so we don't have that same opportunity in River Forest. So there's some nuanced differences. But I think the need to have that relationship with us across the street is most prominent on North Avenue, Madison. Less opportunity on the IDOT controlled Harlem's in North.
Plus but even your point, the simple as the decoration, the streetscape, that kind of thing.
Well, that was,
North Avenue, if going back to the whole gateway notion, and you come in and you know you're in Elmwood and River Forest, and it's a, you know, that street has a synergy.
Right.
To me, that's an improvement. I mean, that starts to designate, I mean, it's a hodgepodge there.
Right.
And that's the kind of thing where I hope there's some kind of outreach. The comprehensive plan actually acknowledges the need to collaborate with those adjacent townships, villages, whoever it may be, because I think that ought to be an objective out of this.
No, actually, I think that's actually a real good idea, and whether it goes on page 43 or 44, I'm even thinking if you look at page 44, there's a framework map that shows the corridors. And there's a paragraph of text already that's a continuation from the previous section.
Yeah.
You can flesh that out a little bit.
Yeah, better. I think maybe even a little heading over here about adjacent, you know, coordination with adjacent municipalities. There's a little thing in there about where opportunity presents itself along the major corridors. I think that could actually be a nice paragraph on this page adjacent to highlighting where those corridors are.
And we've, and just as a side note too, obviously we've done that on Madison with the streetscape. We have made application on North Avenue with Elmwood Park unsuccessfully. And then we also had the, you know, PACE is going through and doing its own transportation plans for, they're doing one right now for Harlem. They did one for North Avenue that John's firm represented the village in. So when those conversations take place, we're at the table in Elmwood Park and in River Forest, just on North Avenue, but Oak Park, Chicago, all the way down to Elmhurst. Yeah. You know, everyone's talking about the corridor and...
Right.
You know. I mean, that's one of those BRT stops already identified on Harlem Avenue.
Is it appropriate, related to Montessori on North Avenue, to be even addressing that location in light of the litigation right now?
Oh, in terms of the future use?
Yeah.
I still think it's
appropriate. It was a commercial property prior. I just, in terms of things that are happening that are not resolved.
No, it's certainly a fair question. Again, how that resolves itself it remains to be seen, but regardless if the school stays or the school leaves, should the school leave at some point, we need to have a plan for how we're going to address it. And we've talked about that in previous plans and as well. So
there has been lockstep consistency with the village's position that ought to be commercial.
Yeah.
And it should be targeted for commercial reinvestment and redevelopment, going back for way before even when I was here. So this is sort of a continuity of that position. It needs to be commercial along that area of the corridor. So I like that idea about the coordination with the other sides. Well, again, it's in here sort of light in different places, but we'll pull it out.
That's how these corridors are going to get enhanced. It's not going to be a one-sided deal. And it's more effective when you've got both sides doing the same thing. Maybe a policy, and this is where I'm going to get, what is the outcome of the comprehensive plan in terms of strategy and things? And that's where, you know, look for these opportunities for grants, joint grants, collaborative grants with adjacent municipalities. Is there a task force that comes out that looks at the major corridors and that kind of, I mean, I don't know. That's where I'm definitive recommendations are high in my book. You know, out of this thing, you know, how do we enhance those things? So, and I think the overall tone, there's a lot of, how should I say? I think you need to be more definitive in your recommendations. There appears to be a need, a lot of language that I think could just be technical. There is a need, you know, whether, and again, I do the same thing, all
right,
that way. But I think, look at that, maybe somebody take a careful eye, look at all the recommendations. And have them, you know, have them binding in a way, because I think they're a little loose, subjective, and again, that's wordsmithing. But
yeah, and you're right. And sometimes we actually go back and intentionally try to put some of it in certain languages, so it's not too. We want to, you know, this is supposed to be a document, sort of a foundation for decision making or help guide decisions. But if it's the village needs to do this. If something comes up where it's not right, the elected officials think that this might not be the right application, they'll say, listen, it says we need to do this. And so that's why he'll say, like, consideration should be given to blah, 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 because we need to think about it, we need to consider it, we should probably do it, but it doesn't come out and say the village shall do blah, because little words like that matter. So, but I think going through it so it's a little bit less where it can be, we can do that. Yeah. I think we can do that.
Couple other quick comments. In terms of residential objective, is written from a, and maybe this is intentional, it's written from our perspective, meaning the residents. It says nothing about attracting new residents, as far as I could tell.
Okay.
And that, you know, it sort of says preserving for our population, for our people, aging in place and all that. It's very, again, sort of insular. And I think the other aspect is trying to attract new families, isn't it? And all that kind of, so I think, again, maybe that's an objective or become an attractive community for other residents, for young families and people that can actually come in, like myself, who came in 14 years ago. Because I think that's we want to remain attractive, not just for the people here. And that's important. I think that is a missing piece, is how people can age in place. So that was good, but I just think we ought to be attractive to others.
Yeah, we tried to, whenever we talked about the population, we tried to use the term current and future residents, current and future village populations, but we'll try to, but you're exactly right. We want to be an attractive place for people to want to move to and to move to, not just people who are here now. So
right.
I'll put that in there. And then I think one of the things that I think came out when we met before the holiday, I think it was actually beneficial to have some of the recent, more high-profile development proposals come along in the months prior to this last year, because it started prompting a lot of community discussions that previously had not sort of been as forefront. Some of the height consideration for Lake and Lathrop. A lot of residents came forward and said they're asking for a big variation, it may be too tall. A couple other residents came out and said, like, maybe now's the time, you know, if every single one of the last 20 years has gotten 5 feet, 7 feet, 10 feet, 12 feet, whatever, maybe we should look at revising the standard if we're approving everything higher. Let's step back and look at what it is, and then draw that line in the sand and say, okay, we're moving it from 50 to X. This would be more reflective of what we've seen over the last 20 years. Or I think even the redevelopment of the senior facility on Harlem and Chicago began to show people that when we say you could have expansion of development on the corridors that may require assembling some adjacent residential, and it can be done very well. Again, it wasn't without controversy. Obviously, there was a lot of meetings about it. One of the women who lived on Bonnie Bray right behind it was an architect, and she said, I could honestly see, she goes, I think she thought it was too tall. But she goes, I could honestly see the remainder of that block and other places on, you know, being for multifamily or for apartments or for something else. She goes, I think it needs to be designed correctly. But she goes, I can see a lot of these over time going that way. So I think they were sometimes difficult conversations to have. The height, the scale, the density, the residential properties being folded into an adjacent commercial or multifamily development. But I think the timing was good to have discussions on a community scale that allowed us to, when it was raised in here, not be something people weren't familiar with, because it's such part of our community dialogue now. But the Chicago healthcare or the senior facility is an example of an expansion with adjacent residential folded in. CVS was as well. So the notion, it happens very seldom and not without a lot of debate. But I think to your point, even over on the west end of North Avenue, we don't want to close the door on the potential of that maybe happening. It may never happen. We don't want to say it shouldn't or can't, because it has. We need to accommodate that. So we do recommend in most of the commercial districts on the corridors going higher than is currently allowed by zoning. Now, that would require a whole other public hearing in zoning, and this isn't that, but this plan is beginning to say we ought to consider raising those standards going forward.
I have more if you want.
Yeah, sure.
You use a lot of terms that are subjective, which obviously is kind of the nature of this, but I think things like high quality is throughout here. High quality is not necessarily a guideline. I think what you mean, and I'm asking, is it contextual? When you talk about high quality design in relationship, you I think what you're asking for is contextual, because there's a architectural character here already.
Right.
And I think maybe it's a matter of going back and wordsmithing some of that the contextual in keeping with the context.
Okay, good.
And that helps establish it a little bit more than just saying high quality design.
Okay.
And it's in there a bunch, so that minor things, you said orientation of commercial should be on streets. But, you know, there could be side streets and all that. I think you're talking about orientation of retail and commercial quarters should be on the commercial corridor, meaning the orientation of doorways and primary entries should be facing the primary street, the primary corridor. For example, there are others where we have side streets and all that. Again, it's just wordsmithing. The one I have, the CVS is an interesting one, and it also gets to this whole notion of screening and buffering. And I think that was a success because there was an outcry that they didn't want the development, and those were necessary steps to make it happen. I don't know that you necessarily have to screen commercial and buffer commercial everywhere in the village. I don't know that that's a necessary And again, this may be nitpicky, but I don't, you know, I think in an urban context on North Avenue and you live there, you're living on next to a commercial corridor.
Well,
so if it requires that, oh, it's not going to happen because then we have to take another house and put up landscaping like CVS, then there may be a solution that doesn't require that. So this sort of says we have to screen and buffer, and I think urban context dictates something else, to be honest.
Well, screening and buffering maybe is defining it better. It could be a fence. It does not, again, the most
architectural treatment.
Right, so I don't want people to think that it's the most extreme example, and the president, Frank Paris, worked so hard to get that in place because there was a reluctance from CVS to do that, and he's like, it's not, the buffer's not wide enough, the berm isn't tall enough, and we met with LAs that said like, oh, the berm shouldn't be that tall, it shouldn't, it's going to be a substantial thing.
Yeah.
You don't have that opportunity most places, so buffering could be a fence. Could be a fence with one tree on the commercial side. It may not be any screening. It may just be fencing. Someplace, so there needs to be some separation where we can get it, but it does not have to mean 60 feet of landscaping because
That's
just not
possible.
If you
look at North Avenue and CVS is repeated all the way down, that's not a success. I don't think that's the right. I don't think
it would also require then taking home.
Buffering is really, in my mind, I'm asking again, buffering is really against the what I'll call the back of house uses, right? You want to see a loading dock and all that. Seeing a storefront from your house isn't necessarily bad, is it? I mean, that's the buildings that turn corners and all that. That's all I'm saying. This is sort of, again, prescriptive, but I don't want to, I think commercial development is good, and I think adjacency to residential is urban, that's how it is. So we just got to, I think, you've got to look at that a little bit, maybe wordsmith.
Right.
I think the buffering from and screening from back of house uses is really what's, I shouldn't say it's noxious, but if that's the kind of thing I think we're trying to avoid.
Right.
I wouldn't mind living next to a restaurant, you know?
Right.
So that's the kind of thing.
Right.
Anyone else?
I think, though, maybe just the one comment I would say to that is, you know, I think it's being cognizant of the commercial corridor as it relates to the residential area.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, CBS, that had to happen, right? And so that solution worked, and we had the space, you can make that work, and actually it's attractive. But I think if you replicate it, that's probably not the model we did.
Yeah, and I don't think this says that. I mean, I hope it doesn't. We'll go back and take a look. But yeah, so that to Eric's point as well, and to yours, where you have commercial fronting the street, and the rear of the commercial abuts the rear or side of a residential, there needs to be some sort of screening there. The size and depth of the property and existing context of uses will dictate what the viable options are for screening or buffering.
I have a comment on page 37 of the working draft. It shows the intended heights of the buildings, and it shows, you know, Harlem at six stories and North Avenue at six stories. Then Lake Street, it shows at max of five stories, and then Madison, it shows at four stories. And we had a lot of discussion at the last meeting about Madison Street really being probably the most immediate, closest development opportunity
right.
to bring something in. And I'm not sure that, I didn't hear resistance from my peers to the idea, the notion of making Madison six stories with a setback and appropriate things so it doesn't look incongruous. But I'd open it up to others. I have no resistance to six stories being there. I think, you know, with an appropriateness with setbacks, it could work. It could also make the project more viable and, you know, increase the number of taxpayers. So that's my perspective. But I welcome comments from my colleagues.
Yeah, you're right. This shows that Madison Street, right now it's limited to 30 or 35, I think. So we show it being up to 50 feet tall. So
what the maximum is that Forest Park has done on that strip?
The tall, when you get down to the commercial areas closer to Harlem, I think the Focus development is gonna be a little bit more than 50. I can call those guys up and find out this afternoon. And I've got the plans for what's going in where Molly's Malone's is. And that's going to be, one story of commercial on the ground floor, three floors of apartments above. So that'll be a four-story mixed-use building. 12 units per floor, I believe. So that's going to be a 36-unit, I believe that's right. A story, or a 36-unit building total. The challenge with the River Forest Corridor is the biggest one. I hear exactly what you're saying is you that would be allowed to happen or be challenging for that to happen unless some major property assembly were to take place.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what's right. Hopeful is that there's a chance to
correct.
Assemble the properties,
right.
The building to build.
And what I may do is we can put an asterisk on these and say, you know, given parcel assembly and the creation of larger development lots, these heights could be expanded upward if a bigger property was assembled or something like that. Yeah, because if you've got a property that's 124 feet deep, think more like Brighton Clean is or Lutheran Family Services is, to put a six-story there, unless you made those bigger properties, I don't know that you could do it. You'd have to go down even more than one level below parking to park anything that tall. You'd have to go down two levels at a minimum to park that. It just gets really tight. That's a lot to do on those sites. Three stories is four stories.
You
can even
footnoting, you know, assuming property assembly.
That's what I think.
Open, but again, you know, I'd want them, the developer, if they're coming in, if they know there's a potential to do six, if they do the property assembly,
correct.
It might make it more.
Attractive or appealing for them
to
right
do the
then.
Property assembly.
Totally
but, I'd be concerned again that they don't do, you know, townhouses on the bottom or something like that. In the
right.
But retail.
Right.
That they have the parking needs addressed.
So we can say, you know, so we can put an asterisk on these and say, for larger properties for redevelopment can be created, and it's a tax or revenue incentive or use incentive for the village, like commercial or whatever else, heights could be considered to be larger or whatever.
I see this document really being used by Eric to give to potential developers,
right.
And
right.
I think if we say that we're open to that, and also give the community a chance to input,
right.
You know, that they see that we're seeing that, because
right.
there might be a lot of support or a lot of resistance, but I haven't heard much resistance.
Well, nobody's seen this yet.
Yeah.
The committees have, so I mean, we're pushing it anywhere from one, two, or three stories taller, depending on the district. So we're pushing pretty hard. We can ask it to go bigger.
And again, the one thing I would say too, it's everything, you can't look at everything in a vacuum. So to John's point, it's okay that you have height, but then depending on what you're putting it somewhere, what's the parking needs? What are the, you know, what are the setbacks? What's the, you know, what kind of retail are we putting in there? And that is all going to drive other decisions. So parking, every time I talk to someone, the cost of parking has gone up like another couple $1,000s, right? It's like $25,000 of space for underground parking and then some. So we can certainly look at that, but I think there's also providing as much, you know, and this is the balance that we run into, it's providing as much flexibility in the plan, but then also trying to create some realistic parameters of what we think is going to happen in these locations.
And that's what we do. We did a little 3D work, modeling, rendering type work on these sites, given one residential deeper lot, keeping the commercial exactly the way it is, some rough parking analysis, and you get much taller than this, it gets real tough, even if you begin to pick up some.
And that's where I think even just putting an asterisk, height restrictions are driven by the ability to address parking concerns and congruous
right.
compatibility.
Neighborhood context, neighborhood
structure. So
okay. That's a good idea.
You know, a larger, more property assembly, the village would be open. It doesn't mean, like, I don't know that we necessarily need to say it's a guarantee, but.
For sure.
I think that fundamentally goes back to one of the first comments I made, that criteria that we're maximizing the use of these commercial corridors.
Correct.
That we're, I think what we're saying is we're welcome to increase density.
Right.
Can I say that?
No, I think it's
again, contextually responsive. So it's not 10 stories, but it's, you know, maybe four
right.
or five, consistent with the street. We want to promote that and maximize and leverage what we have, because
right.
it's sacred again, I think. These are the only areas for development that we're encouraging that. That's
right.
why we did different other things.
And that's one thing that this plan does do, and we made we made sure that this that is consistently more throughout here, that, you know, the key to this, the village, is to maximize our potential along the corridors and balance that with the character, the desired character of the village. But we can't we can't, the plan takes a position of, we have to begin to sort of push the creative envelope on some of the corridors because it's all we've got.
Correct.
And services, expenses go up, needs go up, residents, things go up. And if we're going to make sure that the burden doesn't fall on residential tax base and all we have is these strips of commercial, we've got to leverage these appropriately, but maybe a bit more aggressively than we have in the past. And that's, the plan tries to generally take that tack. And it's in here several places to say just what you said. These are a resource. Right. We've got to begin to leverage these because it's all we've got.
Right.
I agree 100%.
To that end, also, we talk about higher density. We've talked internally in the context of the Lake and Park, you know, the notion of these lots here, and,
right.
and particularly the corridor along the tracks as being a higher potential for higher density.
Absolutely.
Do we say, I don't remember. I
yeah, in fact,
it,
there's,
in
yeah.
That, you know, again, not to preclude, but if there's an opportunity for increased density along tracks, along primary commercial corridors.
No. In fact, there is a diagram that we have, I don't know if it's in this draft or not, I don't think it is, that begins to sort of take that Village Center area and it sort of blocks it off to the area that's up against Lake Street and what should go there versus as you begin to get back behind all that along the tracks where you can have more intense, taller, multifamily. You're not going to have commercial because there's no visibility or activity back there. It's a very difficult commercial area. But we do call that out for higher density, taller residential.
Okay.
We have a diagram. It might not be in this draft, like I said. But I would agree with that exactly.
I'm just going to point out it's 8:22.
Yep.
And I'm
okay.
not trying to rush into it, but I know people have some other commitments. So.
So I think the themes of what you were saying, everybody, all the comments we've heard so far, is the type of stuff we have that will make this a tighter, better, more appropriate document. That's what we're looking for.
Do you have any other comments? Should we email those to you?
Yeah.
Shoot
them
to Eric. And
I'll put them together, and then I've gotten Tim's feedback. I'll put a kind of like a memo together on some of the themes that you've talked about that you can consider then at your next meeting and approve that.
And the nice thing about this approach, and we did it a little bit differently when we did this 15 years ago, is we sort of met with the different boards and commissions early on in the process and got their feedback and did a draft, went to the Planning Commission board. But it was actually staff that suggested we do this round where we take a shot at drafting it. After we've met with you, we've drafted it. Then we take that draft around again to all the boards and commissions, revise it. Then when it goes to the Planning Commission, we can say the Historic Preservation Commission, they've torn through this, we have their comments. We've met with the Sustainability Commission, we've met with them, they've given us 6 pages of comments, we've incorporated their comments. So when the Planning Commission and Village Board get the draft for consideration, it's been vetted by all these groups that have a specific charge on behalf of the village. I think it's very helpful.
So, Eric, given the agenda and the timing, are there other issues we still have to address
in executive session? No.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
No, this is it today.
So get as nitpicky as you want to or as general as you want to, and it's all very helpful for us.
My last comment, I believe it is the last one, is there something with teeth in here? Is there an upfront an executive summary that puts forth, and again, I know this is sort of a benchmark, but is it also a proactive tool? Are we trying to, in the comprehensive plan, set an agenda for the next 10 years of development?
Sure.
Where we proactively go after things? And that's where I think the EDC is helpful.
Yes.
Do we have priority sites? This sort of gets to, Bob, what you were asking, do we want to even venture into looking at some of those sites that may come up for redevelopment, where we want to actually call out, here are the top 10 things that we think we, here are executable items. Here's a list of recommendations for redevelopment.
Yes, we want to be proactive. Once we've gone through this round, we'll be developing what we would call an action agenda or a matrix table, where we have a table likely be several pages long that says, here's the top 8 recommendations for residential neighborhoods on how to improve them. Here's what those recommendations are. Here's the things that need to be done to get those finished. We can also put it, so that's why you'll see in here, we do have specific sites targeted as priority redevelopment sites. So we do want to be proactive. It should be not just how do we use this to react to things
right.
when people come forward, but EDC, what should we start working on next year? Yes.
That's for, are the recommendations even for and I'm not saying this because everybody's volunteering a lot of time, is there a task force that comes out for a specific project or something? Again, yeah. And I think to Lee's point, Eric ought to be able to give this to a developer, and he can flip open. I think there's a lot of good stuff up front, but it'd be nice actually just to have to understand, all right, what do I see as the key areas of redevelopment potential?
Right.
So this becomes a tool to help facilitate. And here, what have we done to actually package that? It's TIF, it's all these things.
Right.
We're facilitating development. But I do think this could be a nice tool to give to somebody,
right,
and they can quickly look at it. I see these guys are on the ball here, and they've actually put together a strategy for redevelopment.
One of the things, so you've hit on a couple of things that is most valuable in terms of what a comprehensive plan can do. One is it helps the community get grants and monies, because if you go to the state, say we're applying for this grant with Elmwood Park, they'll say, well, is your comprehensive plan support your grant application? If you say, well, no, yeah, you sort of go to the bottom of the stack. But if you can say, yeah, it's part of our plan, it's our 20-year thing, we're going after this, you're more likely to get money. The other thing is, when people begin to look at investing in a community, one of the first things they go look at is, what do they have planned for Madison Street? What are they serious about doing? If I came forward with an idea, would they be wanting to play with me? Would they be a good partner? So they do look for that big time. And then thirdly, a lot of communities will form, like, you know, Niles, we did there several years ago. They formed an implementation task force, a committee, a standing, permanently standing committee that did nothing but focus on how can the village implement. And they got it down to the point where if a department head wants to put in a budget request for a piece of equipment or software or staffing, one of the line item things on their budget request is, how does this support a specific recommendations of the comprehensive plan? Like, is what you're requesting for from a budget item supporting something we're trying to accomplish? They got it down to that level. But at a minimum, when this gets adopted, the Historic Preservation Commission should look at this and say, okay, what's our part in helping get this done? Sustainability Commission should look at it and say, like, there's a section here on sustainability. As a sustainability commission and our charge with this for the village, how can we look at the comprehensive plan sustainability stuff? How can we help get this done? Likewise, the EDC ought to be doing that. We talk about this on the commercial corridors. We clearly identified what we want to accomplish. We see what our goals are. How can we help make this happen? It should inform all the boards and commissions.
Yeah,
you're exactly right.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is, I don't know if you necessarily need an addition, because we have a robust group of boards and commissions already. I'm not sure if we need a task force.
I think
executable items.
Right.
So the EDC gets a couple. You know,
yeah, no, no.
Going to go after.
Right.
I agree with that.
XYZ grants here, all the funding mechanisms.
I agree, 100%. Yeah.
Yep. There ought to be a proactive approach of, assembly of land or, you know, whatever. I just think that's where I think this could be a very useful
tool. I agree 100%. I also agree with, we've only had a couple of communities go so far as to do what Niles said. I wouldn't recommend it. It has worked great for them. Most communities don't want to do that.
Right. But I agree with you, Tim. I think if you had each, you have all your action items, your matrix, and you can break it down by, okay, EDC, you're going to look at this.
Right.
And
I think you're right. We have people in place to do it.
That maybe, it's funny, we've never, that's something we can think about. We usually put in that table and say, here's commercial-related recommendations, here's residential-related recommendations. But what we may want to do is organize the action table around existing boards and commissions or groups to say, here's what the Sustainability Commission ought to be working on, and here's what the EDC ought to be working on, as opposed to lumping in some of it. It might be an interesting way to do it.
And quite frankly, some of them span across different boards and commissions. So if you're going to go look at the zoning title and say, hey, we want to revise the zoning ordinance because it's been so many years, that's not just EDC. EDC
Correct.
Is part of that. ZBA is part of that. DRB, Plan Commission, you know. It's maybe spell. Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
We've never done that, but it might be kind of... I think it might make it more actionable. It may make it something easier to get traction.
Yeah.
But it's worth considering. It's an interesting idea.
I think, you know, as a committee, the EDC would be nice. Actually, one of the agenda items ought to be, what are the action items off the comprehensive plan?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by structuring it that way. That's how you've said it.
Because I think this, it's a great guideline, but I think it ought to be proactive.
Right.
I believe in using this as a tool for that. All right, I have to jump. I apologize.
No problem. If you have any other feedback that you would like to send to me, can you get that to me? Today is the 11th. Could you get that to me by the 21st? So that would give you a full week and another weekend. Monday the 21st. Is that?
He said next week.
Well,
Eric trusts my request.
Sure.
I just want to make sure everyone has enough time.
Eric trumps John.
It's, it's like rock, paper, scissors.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then our next meeting would be February 8th, just for everyone's calendar.
Is there any update on the status of the Montessori?
No. Nope. That's it. We're obviously engaged in litigation. I mean, the only change, there was a ruling that came in from the Department of Revenue about the property tax component to that. So we went to the Board of Review. Board of Review agreed that it should be, they should be paying property taxes. Those automatically go to the Department of Revenue as a matter of just process. DOR sided with the school. There's no paper, we've done a FOIA, there's no paperwork, there's nothing to support that. I suspect there's some person sitting in an office and said, oh, this is a school and it should be exempt, and then set it off to the side. So we're actually appealing that decision. But other than that, there's no other status in the courts or anything like that. So.
What's the status of Lake and Lathrop?
So Lake and Lathrop, they have, last time I talked to those folks, they have around 2-3 pre-sales already. And so they're starting to look at more aggressive marketing here in the spring, starting to figure out timing on demolition, remediation, things like that. They haven't finalized that yet, but they're starting to gain some traction from their pre-sales. Good.
Any commercial, interest in commercial space?
As it relates to that, no. Not, although I haven't, in fairness to them, we haven't talked about that recently, so I could certainly get an update on that.
Crazy rumor that I've heard twice so far in the village from different sources.
Okay.
The owner of the cigar shop didn't like the way it was going, so just bought all the property.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that's a new one. And that would be false.
And I'm like, what? And I'm like, pretty sure that's not true. Then a few days later, somebody said, like, yeah, I heard the owner of the cigar shop just ended up buying that whole block because he just didn't like the way it was going, so he was just going to take it all and just do it himself.
He owns 400.
I'm like, oh, interesting.
The owner of the cigar shop owns 400 Ashland, and then also had a special use request in the park to move his and do like a mixed use on North Avenue there.
So I sort of put that idea down. I just sort of laughed, but it was interesting that I heard it twice.
No, that would be false.
I just want to throw it out there. There's a contact I have. His name's Rob Horton. He's a real estate developer, and he has clients, including Kitty Academy and the Learning Experience, that are focused on, you know, early pre-K, summer school options, other things like that. And he develops for these two organizations, and he was interested in talking and learning more about what opportunities we have here. That was raised when, you know, there were concerns expressed over the long-term viability of the Montessori. If that collapses, what could we have? So they could potentially be, he could potentially be involved with doing the build-out of the leasing inside of buildings that comes and bringing his clients in to any of the properties. So I sent that information to Eric to explore, see. But he was very interested.
I'll talk to anybody.
Learning about, well, you have a document. Again, this document is the kind of thing he'd want to be able to give to his clients. So it may be that we need to, what's the expected end point of having this done?
Well, we're hoping to, over the next week or so, get comments back from boards or commissions. Beginning part of February, have a meeting with the plan commission. The date's not set yet for sure.
Early February.
Meet with the plan commission, go through the working draft, get their comments, and then set for later in February a public hearing date. So you hope to have the public hearing by the end of February.
Yep. All right, thanks.
All right, thanks
much.
So move.
Feel better.
Any seconds? Want a second then? Motion to adjourn.
Are we doing that?
Yeah.
Second.
All right, thank you.
Everybody's favorite.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. It is 8:36. Thanks, folks.
Thank you.